Later on, my name is Michael Castro. It's good to see you here. What is always a very wonderful occasion where we celebrate and pay tribute to Arthur Brown and the art of poetry. We're going to hear momentarily from our special guest poet of the evening, Maurice Kenney, and then we'll hear from a number of Arthur's old friends who will share some brief thoughts and stories and musical and verbal tributes of various kinds with us all. Among them are the people you saw up here, Floyd LaFleur, Eugene Redmond, Dwight Homer, Fred Nelson, and Tom Ray is here, who didn't make it to the front. So stick around. It's going to be a full evening. Native American poet Maurice Kenney has been here before. He has read at the Arthur Brown tributes on one other occasion. Maurice knew Arthur. Tonight's appearance of Maurice has even an added significance because his press in New York City, Contact 2 Press, we're very happy to announce, has just come out and published the second volume, second collection of Arthur's poems. It's called Mississippi River Poems. We have a limited number of copies here that will be available for sale. They're available. They're starting to get distributed to the bookstores around the city. So we hope you will partake of this wonderful offering. Let me tell you a little bit about Maurice, although for many of you he needs no introduction. He's widely regarded as one of the top few Native American writers and poets in the country right now. He's the author of some 20 books of poetry and several books of fiction. He writes from the traditional Native American perspective, a perspective in which a unity with Mother Earth is central. Among his books are the titles Dancing Back Strong, The Nation, North, Poems of Home, his selected poems Between Two Rivers, his historical book-length poem, Black Robe. Those last two volumes were nominated for Pulitzer Prizes. Black Robe received the National Public Radio Hodson Award in 1984 for performance. He's a tremendous performer and reader of his work, as you'll momentarily experience. Some things that have been said about Maurice and his work. Maurice Kenney is achieving recognition as a major figure among American writers. That's American writers. Seen by some critics as one of the four or five significant Native American poets. Kenney has a distinctive voice, one shaped by the rhythms of Mohawk life and speech. Some of you may have encountered Maurice's voice reading the very lively literary magazine Contact 2, which usually has a page or so of his comments about the current literary scene, which is always great and enlightening reading, and amusing reading, too. We're really very privileged to have him here. It's always a great treat. So without further ado, let me just bring him up here and ask you to open your ears and hearts to Maurice Kenney.
It's very good to be back in St. Louis, back in Dops, back in Arthur's land, and I always think of Arthur in the river. I don't know why, but I always think of Arthur in the river. I remember that he used to do a lot of readings down at the River Cafes, I believe, I guess that's why I associate him with the river. And it's good to be back in Arthur's memory, to quote both Arthur and Shirley LaFleur. It's also good to be back in this land of restaurants. It's one of the reasons why I like coming here. You guys got good restaurants in this town. Where I live in the Adirondack Mountains, we ain't got them. We ain't got them. We got a Burger King, though, which I don't ever eat at. Okay. I'm going to read to open the session, I'm going to read a part of a long poem I wrote called Dugout. And a dugout was a traditional Iroquois Algonquin canoe, which had been just a big tree and burnt out and then dug out. And they were used by many people for many reasons. And two of these traditional dugouts, some 500 years old, surfaced in a pond near where I live in the Adirondacks. And it was built for four people to ride in. And as it turned out, it was four men who went out to look at these boats. And I was one of the four men from Akwesasne, the reservation. Story has never stopped. A chain of days, night, following night on bat wings, or moons in the eastern dawn, the grave on the mountain. It is the mountain. It is time itself, whatever time is. It is the budding of the beech and the falling of the leaf, whistle of the wind. It is toothless old men or old women who no longer hear spittle of the sick. It is the fissure at kill, hawk, the birthing of groundhog. It is the fire, this fire, in the pot-bellied stove, stoked in the old rabbit dog asleep beside it. It is the narrative of nations, nation and history, in the circles of trees, circles, circles, circles. Four men, four men, four men, four men, four. Now, first, may I have a drink of water? My mother is a fish. My mother is a turtle. My mother is a muskrat. My mother is a beaver. My mother is a boat. My mother is a reed. My mother is my mother, and all her parts are me. My mother is a fish. My mother is a reed. My mother is corn and bean and squash. My mother is sumac and smoke. My mother is honey. My mother is a berry on the bramble. My mother is the sap of the maple. My mother is a boat. My mother is a rapid in the stream. My mother is the wind. My mother is a coot. My mother is a bear. My mother is this house. My mother is the fire. I am my mother. And my mother is me. My mother is a fish. Is a fish. Is a fish. She is a bone. She is yarrow. She is hawkweed. My mother is a deer. My mother is a snipe. My mother is a blue heron. My mother is a yellow rose. My mother is a sprig of mint. My mother is a birch. My mother is a cedar that sings in the wind. My mother is a cloud. My mother is a star. A star. My mother is a star. My mother is a dream. Is a dream. My mother is a grave. My mother is a wolf. My mother is water. My mother is loam. My mother is fire. My mother is wind. My mother is a fish. 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 I am my mother, and my mother is me. And this is the story of four men, 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 who boarded a boat so many years ago. Fog has covered their footsteps. Wind drowned their voices. Something a little lighter. I live in a little village called Saranac Lake in the high peaks of the Adirondacks. I have been teaching in a little college there. And the first week I was in this little town, I was walking down the main street and I was passing by an antique store. And this man who owned the shop came out and he looked me dead in the face and he said, are you Maurice Kenney? And I, you know, looked at myself and I said, yeah, I think so. He said, you're the Mohawk? I said, yeah, I am. He said, how come you got blue eyes? And I said, you know, isn't that funny? My father asked my mother the same question. Stone throwing. He called out, hey, you with the blue eyes, you can't be an Indian. Well, that's what my father said too, to my mother. Where did he get those blue eyes? She just smiled, and her smile said, none of your business, and gave birth to another child, as if to say it's not the pale of blood, but what the heart is made of. Hey, he called out, you don't have no feather in your hair. That's right, I said, when I grow older and no rings on my toes either. What's your Indian name? He asked. And hey, speak some of that language. It's not a name or words that makes a man a man. My reply finally calmed his nerves, and I lit my pipe and sat quietly in the dark. He left me alone then, probably a little confused, but that's life. I assured him I could dance, but I wouldn't. Like many other writers and painters and dancers and singers and musicians and people, I travel a great deal. And last spring I was invited to Gettysburg College in Pennsylvania. And I was thrilled to death because they were paying me a very large sum of money. But apart from that, oh yeah, I like money, I really do. I have a cat to support. I was extra thrilled because about 25 miles away from the college is Carlisle, the town of Carlisle, where in 1879 the first Indian boarding school was created by a General Pratt. And I was there with friends, Joy Harjo, marvelous poet, Geary Hobson, Annalee Walters, Robert Conley, and we all wanted to go to the old Indian school and go through the archives and, you know, see if we could find our grandfathers and our grandmothers there. Well, they didn't let us do that. They showed us, I think it was General Eisenhower's picture and Westmoreland's picture, and I didn't have any tomatoes with me. But anyway, the very fine young lady who brought us all there came over to the motel where I was staying with a big box, and it was filled with photographs of hundreds of the native children who were brought there from 1879 to 1918. And one photograph caught my attention, and I couldn't put it down. And Paula, her name was Paula Olinger, and Gary Hobson both said to me, "When are you going to write your poem?" And I said, "I've already started." Photograph, Carlisle Indian School, for Gary Hobson and Paula Olinger. I hear ancient drums in your eyes, see dances on the mouth. Why is this teenage boy stiff in the shutter, punishment, pain on the cheek, loss in folded hands? Who is this boy, nationless, nondescriptive, in an army uniform, devoid of hair feather, fetish, and paint? Stiff, young sapling, rising from some eastern wood, straight as a Duwamish totem, tall as a southwestern Mesa Pueblo, color so tight it proclaims a hanging. No pemmican or jerky or parched corn in the clenched fist that your mother gave to eat on the road to Pennsylvania, where Delaware once built longhouses, made fires, loved in furs, fished rivers, praised the Creator for boundless beauty. Who is this boy, hair cut, tongue cut, whose youthful warrior braids lay heaped on the barber's floor, spine straightened by General Pratt's rules of order, ancient image scattered over forested hills, so many leaves from a dying apple tree? Who is this teenage lad with eyes cold in utter fear, mouth vised and shut a prayer and song, whose thin legs tremble within the army trousers, arms quiver in dread of the unexpected, an instructor standing off from the flash of the insensitive camera demanding compliance? There should be a flute to his lips, making songs, songs of love, music of love. There should be a lance in his grip to take home game. There should be a future in the roll of his cheek. There should be a vision in his spirit, a name given for honorable deeds, a drawing of the deed on stretched skin of the winter count. He stands before the photographer, amalgamated in uniform and shaved head. He stands compromised before his teachers, all that is left to him, which is him. Beaded moccasins below the cuffs of his pants, but the beadwork so faint in the photo, his great nation cannot be seen. It can be guessed that probably the supply room ran out of army shoes the morning his wagon arrived at the boarding school. Who is this lad? He has no name, no land, no nation. Is he Jim Thorpe, Louis Tawanama? Where was he born? When was he born? Who is his father, his uncle, his siblings? Who is the mother who suckled him at breast? Is this boy entombed in the unmarked grave of the Military Institute, which won so many wars by bringing so many proud children to their knees? I listen for the drum in your eyes, wait to see the dance on the mouth. All I hear are your bitter cries of anguish. He has no name, only a reflection. His is one of the many spirits Chief Seattle prophesied
would forever roam this once free and beautiful land, and that always the General Prats would be aware of his ghost. This photograph, a reminder of this nameless boy. Who is he? My grandfather?
I have a student back home, a young lad who is a very fine, both poet and photographer. And he doesn't like taking portraits of people. In fact, he doesn't like taking portraits really of anything. And I watched him photographing some wild flowers this past summer, and he did a real ceremony, a really dance around this group of wild flowers, and I wrote this poem for him. It's called For Brett. He spotted them, committed a ceremonial dance around them, knelt, leaned, wet his lips, pressed the trigger, and shot. Click. And for a very long time, the black-eyed Susan would gloss on the paper and perhaps never wither into autumn. He had leaned into something precious, something inexplicably complex. This is a little sticky up here. I'd like to read one or two poems of the village where I live in Saranac Lake. When I first went there to live, I'm actually from north of that village, 65 miles north up on the St. Lawrence River. But when I first went there to live, they placed me into a student residency. And I tell you, that was quite a year of my life. In the apartment below me, for example, there were four hockey players. And I got to be pretty good friends with them as soon as I possibly could, because they had encouraged a skunk to come into the apartment. And they had a roast on the living room floor. The house I lived in was called Tamarack. Tamarack. It was a house, a real house, with kitchen and beds, living room and bath. It wasn't really a tree, and yet it was made of raw wood, smelling of forest green and ripely logged. It wasn't really a tree, though odd birds lived there. Cats and poets, basketball players, a guitarist whose music twang was never heard, bear hunters who couldn't shoot straight, nor home game. It was a tamarack, but it wasn't a tree. It wasn't a tree. It wasn't a tree. I'm sure it wasn't a tree. Saranac Lake, some of you may remember that back in the 20s and 30s, it was a curing village for TB. And so most of the houses there are what we call cure cottages. I live in one, but I live in the one that was one for poor people, not very big. At the same time, in 1887, Robert Louis Stevenson, the Scottish writer, came there to cure, and he stayed there a year, and then he found out he didn't even have TB and left and went to the South Pacific someplace, and there died of some other disease that wasn't TB. But his cottage is still there, and it's quite an attraction for tourists. And some time ago, they used to allow artists to go there and stay for the summer, you know, painters or writers or whatever. And so I applied the first summer I was there for a residency in his cottage, and this was the response. Robert Louis Stevenson Cottage. I've had enough writers here, the owner said. They can tear up your mind, he cautioned when I inquired for summer occupancy. He closed the conversation, and so I moved into a house of chocolate truffles instead. 14 miles outside of town is one of the most incredible museums I've ever had the joy and pleasure of walking through. It's called Six Nations Indian Museum, and the founder and current director is a man by the name of Ray Fadden, the most important Mohawk historian that we have alive today. Ray is now 81 years old, and I go out and visit him a lot because he's my teacher. He teaches me a good deal. And this one summer day, I went out, and he was not feeling very good. He was kind of mean and in a really bad mood. And I wrote this poem for him. It's called Mysteries. I should say also that Ray has about 35 bears that he feeds in the woods there. He really takes care of the animals and the birds. And, you know, he sees ill birds or ill animals on the forest floor, and he brings them into his home, and he takes care of them, and he makes them well again, and then releases them back into the woods. He has some very funny stories about bringing a porcupine in to live with him one time. He paper trained him and then sent him out in the woods, and every time he had to go to the bathroom, he had to come back in the house to use the paper. Mysteries for Ray Fadden. I watched him take down the chicken wire fence, his white mane brighter than sun, his face blue, twilight chicory as the morning light careened above spruce and pine. He carried lightness, and yet his shoulders drooped, his hands empty except for a hammer to pull the mesh away from the garage walls. He stepped about holding mountains in his hands. There was nothing left on the shadowed floor but shadows and a single feather. Neither a smear or speck of blood showed either death or war. He had cleaned the mess, brown feathers scattered here and there, two stuck in the mesh of the wire, one embedded in the cement wall. He washed away the blood, except for a stain on his own chin. His account was brief. There was no need to garnish the event. I came out yesterday morning as the sun struck the tops of that white pine, traveling east to southward with a handful of corn. He'd been a friend. 2 years. 2 years past we met on the forest floor. He, drowsy from the pain of a broken wing. 2 years I fetched feed and water, felt the wing grow in strength, told him stories, and listened as he told stories to me. His flight across the skies, the mountain trees, his hours waiting prey in a lone and naked bough of a long dead elm tree. Of flights into sky, distant sky of airs and lands we don't know. He'd speak of many mysteries men might need to know, but find them difficult to understand. I came out here this morning, glad to know sun would shine today and no rain fall. A tanager whistle on that new wood fence across the road, and chipmunks squeaked in the low branches of these cedars. I think I whistled with the bird. It was a new day. I'd passed the darkness of the night once again. A hot cup of coffee in my hand, my wife put a good breakfast on her table. I was thinking Jesus had been a real man, a good man. The garage door was open a crack. Blood smeared the jam low down close to the ground. I threw the door open. The floor was littered with feathers, a hole torn in the mesh, more blood than the cage floor. I knew his spirit was in flight to those mysteries I spoke of before. I knew this raccoon, well, it's natural. It's natural. Tooth and claw, the Christian Bible says. Somehow I'd suppose it's probably right. I won't hate the raccoon, nor cherish my bird the less. He struggled to live, more my fault than his.
I put him to death. I signed the paper and paid the claw and tooth to execute. What makes me feel bad is that we didn't have a chance to have a last chat. Lightness in his hands, he carried mountains. Sun on his mane, his face was dark. He rolled the wire and dragged it outside as though it were a heavy stone. He stacked the 2x4s that formed the cage, saying they'd make a good fire. He looked up into the sky. I mean, today, got a lot of work to do.
A little lighter. At Akwesasne, you may know it by the name of St. Regis, where, of course, the gambling problem was this past year, which I do not wish to discuss. There is held in June a kind of a home week where people like myself, who don't live on the reservation anymore, go home. And they have, always traditional foods to eat and traditional dancing, and there are canoe races on the St. Lawrence River, and so forth. And so I always go back because it's fun, and it's for 3 days. Friendship days at Akwesasne. Humid afternoon by the St. Lawrence. Women canoe racers paddle the river, full of fry bread, soda, and hot strawberry rhubarb pie. I stumble under the cedar arbor to listen to the drum and singing. Outfitted Mohawks circle a stomp dance. I take a place in a bench near an elder woman who asks in Mohawk, what do I do? Tote bag slung over my left shoulder. I figure I should own up. I'm a writer in smiles. What kind? She asked, really curious. A poet, I replied proudly, to which she offered a grunt, got up from the bench, and huffed off. Well, maybe she was right. This one I just dare not read in Saranac Lake. They'd string me up for sure. And it's simply called Saranac Lake, and it was the first summer that I went there to take my job at the college, August 1985. I stood outside this fancy hotel, feeling pretty good to be out of Brooklyn a while in mountain cool, mountain breeze, staring at the mystery of those Adirondacks, those crystal lakes, though dead in acid rain. The breeze not only lifted my long, clean ponytail, but also cooled my tennis-shod feet. A freshly laundered T-shirt was on my back, with lettering stenciled in gold against purple dye. My face had been washed that morning and teeth brushed. Nails were even clipped. Well, there I stood outside this fancy hotel, proud in my Mohawk blood, and writing gifts with sun shining on my cheeks, thinking of teaching this autumn in the local college, when out the door frumped an older couple. The lady's lioness hair breezed in the same wind as mine, yet there was disdain. And the gentleman wore tennis sneaks exactly as mine, and there was disdain, not on my lips, a coldness not frozen in my heart by those mountain winds. She to him, looking me dead in the eye, "This hotel has gone to ruin," she added in acute barb, "and so has that college." They strode down the street, leaving me not only speechless and feeling dirty, but about to resign my teaching job at that denigrated college, a job I'd been fighting against taking. all my life. And another one that is a trifle bit more serious, it's called Young Male. I lived in New York City for a long time. It's a magical city. I still love it. I just think that a little of the magic has been rubbed off the lamp. Young male, you sat quietly across the subway aisle, raucous thunder howling in your throat, thunder which would gag the breeze in mine. Your tight fists are caked with sludge of cement, hands which would slaughter 6 million buffalo on the range if there were 6 million buffalo. Instead, you build nuclear reactors. Your hair is soft and loose, sports a blonde sheen. Hazel eyes send out suspicious messages, afraid I'll scalp those flowing locks, tearing the bloody membrane from your head. You squat in the subway seat like an old mountain man of the old as yet unconquered West, a green blade ready to skin beaver or any cuss you don't much like the crook of his jaw. Your thighs bulge, your heavy arms are thick with electrical power of whips. I wonder if there's a smile in your soul. Can you bend to sniff a violet? I doubt you'd scent anything but a double whiskey, a hooker on the curb, your hunting boots, your own rawness. Your face is not ugly, nor does it appear particularly mean. Even those hazel eyes don't seem too cruel. But when I look at those hands knotted in a crisp clench, I know you would crush me on a whim, for you are America, not the land, rivers, mountains, desert or sky, not hawk or wolf. You are the superhighways, skyscrapers, acid streams clogged with dead rainbows, and you are Gary, Indiana, downtown LA, Burger King, adult bookstores, Ronald Reagan, New Jersey that stole the Giants and now tease the American Exchange. Your prows rumble as the subway slides through the harbor tunnel to Bowling Green Station. When the door opens, you stand. I'm amazed to see how short you are, shorter than me by an inch or two, but bulky in rump and flank. We ascend the escalator. You tramp off towards Broad Street. I amble to the post office in the old Cunard building to send letters home. I know you are here to stay and that you are scouting Buffalo. A couple of older poems, with your permission. The two or three pieces I'm going to read are actually based on the music of the drum in the longhouse that is used for social dances. None of these pieces are ceremonial. It's like, a Friday night or Saturday night when high school kids or college kids get together to have a dance. And we do the same thing, and we do it for the idea that our little children will come into the longhouse and learn the dances, the songs, and the language. Drums. Listen, listen, drums, drum, dance, dance, rattles, rattle, sing, sing, drums, dance, rattle, sing, pause and dance and drums, drum to the song of the young warriors. Listen, thunder shakes, shakes,
Thunder shakes the floor. Listen. 100 feet. 100 feet. Move, 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 move. From the ancients into grandfather's shoes. Move, move. 100 feet. Move, move. We come. We come to greet. We come to greet and thank the strawberry plants growing, growing there, as tall as high, as tall as high. Grasses, grasses, mice in the grass, chicory in the fields, owl on a branch. We come to greet and thank. We come to dance. Moccasin. Listen. 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 Moccasin, moccasin. Moccasin, moccasin. Moccasin, moccasin. Moccasin, moccasin. Moccasin, moccasin. Moccasin, moccasin. Circle, circle. Dance, dance. Drums, drum. Pound, pound. Rattles, rattle. Sing, sing. Wind howls like a wolf on the hill. Thunder thunders. Shake, shake. Wind sings in the cold air. Moccasin, moccasin. Move, move. Move, move. Moccasin, moccasin. Move, move. Wind howls. Wind sings. Leaves fall in the frost. Apples ripen in the frost. Wolves seek lairs in the frost. Snow falls. Hills rise. Sun sets. Sun, 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 sets. Moccasin, moccasin. Moccasin, moccasin. Moccasin, moccasin. Moccasin, moccasin. Moccasin, moccasin. Circle, 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 circle. Dance, 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 dance. Pound, pound, rattle, rattle, dance, dance. We come to greet and thank the winds, the birds, the snow, the drum, the drummer, the dance, the dancer. Move, 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 sun, move, moccasin. December. Set up the drum. Set up the drum. Set up the drum. Winters on the creek. Dark men sit in dark kitchens. Words move in the air. A neighbor is sick, needs prayer. Women thaw frozen strawberries in the dark. A drum, a drum, a drum. Kids hang out eating burgers at McDonald's. The Williams boy is drunk. Set up the drum, set up the drum, set up the drum. Berries thaw are crushed, fingers stained and tongues. Set up the drum, set up the drum, set up the drum. A neighbor is sick, say a prayer. Dark men sit in dark kitchens, wind rattles the moon. The next piece has several dedications on it. One for Arthur Brown. I read it here some years ago. Here at Duff's, and Arthur sat right over there against the wall. And the night before, we had spent over at Michael's house most of the night arguing poetry. And I got a nap that afternoon, and he didn't. And while I was reading this poem, he fell off the chair asleep. I didn't say too much to him. The second dedication is for my good and beautiful friend Shirley LaFleur, sitting there next to Michael. And the third is not really a dedication, but a remembrance of the massacre of Lakota people in 1890 at Wounded Knee, December 29th. Over 200 women, children, and elders were slaughtered by the 7th Cavalry
somewhat in revenge for the wipeout of Custer in 1876 at Little Bighorn. You may remember the ghost dance. The ghost dance had been taken from a vision by a Paiute man by the name of Wovoka. And he told the people in the late 1800s that if they danced hard enough and long enough, they would dance the buffalo back to the plains. And in that dance, they would have a great vision, and they would fall out and be reunited with their ancestors in the spirit world. Well, we know it didn't happen. They did dance. They did have a vision. They did fall out. They did see their ancestors because they were dead. They were shot and buried in a communal grave. December 29th, 1890. I am the sun, a song of praise, defiance, and determination. And I take a quote from the holy man, Black Elk. I did not know then how much was ended. When I look back from this high hill of old age, I can see the butchered women and children lying heaped and scattered along the crooked gulch, as plain as when I saw them with eyes still young. And I can see that something else died there and was buried in the blizzard. A people's dream died there. It was a beautiful dream. The nation's hoop is broken and scattered. Black Elk. Father, I come. Mother, I come. Brother, I come. Father, give us the arrows. Chung, Beo, Pai, Wap, Pala. Father, I hold one for Bigfoot. Mother, I hold one for Black Coyote. Brother, I hold one for Yellow Bird. Father, give us back our arrows. Chung, Peo, Pai, Wap, Pala. Brother, give us sky. Father, give us sun in the east. Father, give us night in the west. Father, watch our shadows. Father, give us back our arrows. Chung, Peo, Pai, Wap, Pala. Mother, your breast is bare. Mother, your breast was not enough to sustain us. Mother, hold our bones now. Mother, we search for our arrows. Chung, Peo, Pai, Wak, Pala. Brother, we cried for you. Brother, we called you back. Brother, we descended with you and your flesh and your bones and your fur, which kept us warm. Brother, when our arrows are returned, we will seek you. Chung, Peo, Pai, Wak, Pala. Arrows, now the skies are diseased. Arrows, now the earth is diseased. Arrows, now the people are sick on dreams. Arrows, come back to us. Chung, Peo, Pai, Wak, Pala. Our father is gone. Our father has fled. Our father has turned his face. Arrows, give us back our father. Our mother has closed her eyes. Our mother has closed her mouth. Our mother has closed her heart. Arrows, give us back our mother. Our brother has wandered away. Our brother does not walk. Our brother has gone down. Arrows, give us back our brother. The arrows broke a greasy grass. The arrows broke a crazy horse. The arrows broke with Sitting Bull. Father, give us back our arrows. Chung, Peo, Pai, Wak, Pala.
In the river of his blood, I stand in Bigfoot's grave. In the shout of fear, I shout for Black Coyote. In the dance of his dream, I dance for Yellowbird. Father, give us back our arrows. We will put the center back in your country. We will circle stones and make the hoop in your country. We will plant the seed of the sacred tree in your country. We will fill the river with water. We will fill the woods with trees. We will clothe the bones with flesh. We will empty the graves. We will call back the wolf, the deer. We will build the walls of the dream. We will make and tend the fire in your country. For I am the sun. I am the sun. I stand above the world. Chung Peo Pai Wakpala. Chung Peo Pai Wakpala. Father, give us back our arrows and make a woman into a child, a boy into a man, a girl into a woman, an arrow into a country into a home into the sun. Chung Peo Pai Wakpala. Chung Peo Pai Wakpala. Chung Peo Pai Wakpala. Father, give us no more graves. Father, give us back our arrows. We had learned to hold them sacred.
And the last poem I'd like to read for you tonight, I think, is on a positive note. I was told I should never finish I Am the Sun and just walk away, that I should do something very positive. And I think I Am the Sun is very positive. It builds to the rebuilding of that dream, not just for the Lakota people, but for all of us. Tonight is a pretty ugly night in the lives of American youth and their parents and their siblings and their grandparents. They're facing tomorrow night at midnight slaughter. Slaughter. I didn't vote for the son of a bitch that put those young people there. And I hope nobody in this room did vote for George Bush. Legacy. My face is grass, color of April rain. Arms, legs are the limbs of birch, cedar. My thoughts are winds which blow. Pictures in my mind are the climb uphill to dream in the sun. Hawk feathers and quills of porcupine running the edge of the stream, which reflects stories of my many mornings and the dark faces of night, mingled with victories of dawn and tomorrow. Corn of the fields and squash, the daughters of my mother who collect honey and all the fruits. Meadow and sky are the end of my day, the stretch of my night, yet the birth of my dust. Meadow and sky, my wind's the breath of a fawn, the cry of the cub, the trot of the wolf, whose print covers the tracks of my feet. My word, loaned, legacy, the obligation I hand to the blood of my flesh, the sinew of my loins, to hold to the sun and the moon, which direct the river that carries my song and the beat of the drum to the fires of this village, which endures. Thank you very much for being here tonight to celebrate Arthur Brown's new book and his beautiful poetry. Thank you.
Thanks to Mark.